Gary Kay's Almost Daily Rants and Raves.
The Week.
The Women in AV Wavecast.
Green AV.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to The Week on Rave Radio. I'm Joel Rollins. Last week on this show, we spoke with Gary Kay about preparing the salesperson for a trade show or an exhibition. This week, I've asked Bill Scherer, a noted consultant in the AV industry, to join us to talk about something even broader, like how to get everybody in our organization involved in marketing. In the meantime, let me remind you that The Week is brought to you by Mitsubishi, who make a wide variety of products for our industry, including the new Playout Composer system for production and playback of video walls, digital signage, and any place you need high-quality multi-screen images. You can find out more about that and Mitsubishi's other products at www.mitsubishi.com. Also on Rave Radio, take a listen to our other podcasts, like the Green AV Podcast, the Wavecast from Women in AV, and Gary Kay's Almost Daily Rants and Raves. You can find them all at www.ravepubs.com and on iTunes. Here on The Week, we try to address the most important items we see in AV news for the week, and we bring you a range of guests for a conversation about subjects important to our industry. In the news this week is the Digital Signage Expo, going on currently in Las Vegas. Rave has a big team there, shooting in-booth videos of the new products and services available from each manufacturer. Rather than go into them here, I want to send you to www.ravepubs.com, where you will see all the news as it is being posted live from the show floor. You should really catch the talk Gary had with Sam Taylor of Almo about the digital signage market, as I think you're going to find their comments interesting and very worth listening to. And one additional item of note, when you reach that page, take a look at Gary's note on the coolest thing he has seen so far. Believe it or not, wearable digital signage. If you've never seen people wearing a big LCD screen like a hat before, you're in for a treat. Next week in Dallas, I'll be attending the Infocom Live event, a gathering of folks involved in the rental and staging portion of our industry. I'll be blogging and posting this show live from Dallas, so stay tuned. In the meantime, let's move on to our guest segment for the week. Well, as I mentioned earlier, this morning we're going to be talking a lot about how to mobilize sales in your entire organization. With me is Bill Scherer of Excel Management and Marketing. Bill's a noted consultant within the AV industry, and he's one of Infocom's most frequent and most requested instructors. Bill and I have worked together both at Infocom and in three different companies where I was in management. So when the request for today's topic came up, he was the first person that I thought of. And Bill, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
It's a pleasure.
Bill, as I mentioned earlier, over the last couple of weeks, we've talked a lot about trade shows. Dean Hills was on with us talking about his system for gathering trade show information electronically. That led us into another conversation with listeners about the idea of people preparing for a trade show. And, you know, we went over product knowledge and dress and things like that. And one reader almost immediately and quite astutely sent in an email to say, but aren't those things we should be doing every day? And sometimes you look and say, the simplest questions have the deepest answers. So I called you. Bill, are those things we should be doing every day?
Of course they are. The difference is that at a trade show, you're able to gather a large number of prospects or clients or contacts in one place at one time, and it's less noticeable throughout the other 362 days of the year because you're probably dealing with them in much smaller groups or even more frequently one-on-one. And a lot of the people that have responsibility for selling, whether they are aware of it or not, are not in the trade show setting and therefore don't think about it very much. They aren't even sure that's what they're doing.
I think that the entire organization is on display every day, whether we realize it or not.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that the people who go to a trade show know that they are there in a sales or marketing or highly visible setting, and they're paying attention to it. There's an awareness there that doesn't seem to happen day to day. And the people who are probably some of our most effective salespeople aren't there at the trade show. They aren't the ones who get to go. So they still have day-to-day impact every time they interact with a client or a prospect, and they're not always paying attention to that.
Well, how do we make that happen?
Well, I suppose one way you make it happen is to include it as part of your corporate culture and stress it day-to-day, that every time anybody in our organization interacts with anybody in a client or prospect organization, there is an impact being made, whether you're paying attention to it or not. It starts at the switchboard, to the extent we still have switchboards in the organization. I know one company that calls their receptionist the vice president of first impressions. And it's true, I think. This woman happens to be a woman. And I'm thinking of two or three of them personally that I know that are really very good. And they say the same thing. Good morning. This is so-and-so from such-and-such. How may I help you? And they say that 75 to 175 times a day. And it still sounds good at 4:30, even though they've been saying it every minute and a half since 8:30.
Well, that's something that, you know, you've worked with me on that at Adcom, for instance, where we merged a number of audiovisual companies, and our biggest challenge was corporate culture. We couldn't have enough rules to deal with enough situations for enough businesses that we were in. So we had to go back and look at, okay, let's manage by a set of ideals, by a culture. How do you start wrapping that into a company culture? The idea that when an employee comes into work every morning, he's a salesman, whether he or she, whether they recognize it or not.
Obviously, it has to start with at senior management. You may recall that I was a Vistage chair, which was a group of CEOs, non-competitive CEOs in a membership organization. And the number one concern that those people had in my particular group, those companies ranged from about $4 million up to about $60 million. Every one of those CEOs said their number one concern, ahead of everything else, and it shocked me, was developing, maintaining, and improving their corporate culture. So it's something that they have to talk about and think about every day. They have to enlist the support of their management staff in doing it. They have to act it out in terms of the things they do that are consistent with the corporate culture that they say they want. And many don't, by the way. I could give you lots of examples where they said one thing and did another. I'm talking about senior management now and CEOs. And we all know that if there's ever a difference between what someone says and what they do, people are going to believe what they do. So this is not something that's a paint-by-numbers or add-water-and-stir kind of a process. It isn't something that you can say, okay, today we work on our corporate culture. It's an ongoing process, and a lot of it has to do with whether you've gathered around you people who believe in that corporate culture and are willing to actively support and promote it. Can't give you a simple answer to it.
Actually, I'm sitting here as you're talking, thinking about just how difficult that one is. Because when you're somebody who, I mean, if you look at the dealership organizations in our industry, most of them are privately owned. Most of them are relatively small companies. And when you're an entrepreneur who's spent their life putting together a company like that, it is very difficult not to fall into the do as I say, not as I do, because of that subconscious thought that, well, it's my company, so I can bend the rules if I want to. But when you do that, you're demonstrating in an incredibly visible manner that those rules are flexible. I will admit to failing at that, you know, because that is a very, very difficult thing to do when you're running during the day, to remember that you have to exemplify the corporate culture that you want the company to have, especially in a smaller organization.
Oh, I think we all fail at it in a lot of ways. And there are ways that sometimes come across as pure thoughtlessness, but that leave a deep scar on the people who witnessed it. For example, two of us are going to fly from California to New York on business, and one of us is the CEO and the other isn't. And once we board the airplane, we find out that, lo and behold, even though I've been talking about cost containment, I'm flying in business class, and the person that's going with me isn't.
I've actually been in that embarrassing situation with an employee, and it wasn't deliberate. It was that I flew so much I got upgraded.
Yeah, well, you can explain it away that way, but we all know the message that it leaves. We can tell the employees we're going to do something and then not do it, or not do it well, or not do it as soon as we said we would. We can promise them that we're going to start some sort of a employee feedback forum, and everyone kind of looks forward to that, and then either we don't start it, or we do start it, and in the first couple of encounters, we snuff the comments that are made, which tells the employees we really don't want your feedback. And there are just hundreds of ways that we can damage our corporate culture instead of building and reinforcing it. And it's just something that has to be constant.
Well, in terms of the corporate culture that we came to talk about today, the idea of everybody in the industry, everybody in your organization selling or being part of marketing, which is something that you've preached to me for nearly 30 years. I guess there's two different avenues from which we have to look at that. One is, I honestly believe, especially in a technical industry like this, that everybody has those contacts with clients, that everybody influences the impression of our company and therefore our marketing every day, whether they know it or not. Give me some examples of how that works.
Well, finally, we're in a personal service business. Nearly all of us are in a personal service business. And we sometimes let ourselves believe that it's the technology and it's the outcomes and it's the systems and it's the equipment that people are buying. And I'm not sure that's true. I believe that regardless of the size of the organization or the number of people engaged in some given kind of transaction or relationship, that people are buying from people. And there's a saying that's probably as old as the Phoenicians with respect to sales, that other things being equal, people will buy from people they like. Now, that is oversimplified, of course, but I do think it's very real if we see ourselves in a personal service business, that business is delivered from you to me. Yes, we have organizations around us, but it's fundamentally what's going on between the two of us. So there's the first consideration that we can't lose sight of. The second consideration is that we know from, if you'll forgive an expression, both research and common sense tell us that there's no such thing as a neutral encounter. Any time that you and I come together to talk about anything related to business, if you are the client or prospect, you will leave that encounter either feeling a little bit better about your relationship with me or not quite as good, which means that there really is no such thing as neutral. I probably won't come away from it feeling just the same as I did when I came into it. And if we lose sight of either of those concepts, then I think we're not leveraging and using the sales resources that we have. Let me give you just one very telling example that I experienced personally. One thing I would say to anybody in a technology business in framing this example is that we know that technicians and technical people have much more credibility than anybody who is officially in a sales capacity. Recently, I just bought a new air conditioning system for my home. It was a protracted decision, didn't have long to make it because it was hot and the air conditioning was broken. And I ended up buying a system that cost about $8,000, which to me is a substantial investment. I, of course, had a little buyer's remorse. Have I done the right thing? When the technician showed up to install it and remove some of the other equipment that was in the house, I couldn't resist asking him if I had made the right decision. And his answer was, you made the perfect choice. There were a number of ways you could have gone, but looking at your home and seeing what it is that you have by way of requirements, you couldn't have done any better. And I believed him. I was nervous about what I had believed from the sales rep, but not nervous at all about the technician. That very same company, I heard a story about them some weeks later where a technician had showed up on a service call, different technician, different call, showed up on a service call, and the customer said to him, "Where have you been? I'm sweltering. I'm dying of the heat, and it's taken you 3 days to get here." And he said, "Don't blame me. These things are breaking down all over town." Now, which technician made the proper impression?
Well, obviously the first one.
Without a doubt.
If you're, okay, that then those are, if I think about my company, that's what I want my employees to be like. And frankly, I think I have some who simply have a natural talent for that. And these are the techs that you constantly get calls from customers about how helpful they were, about, you know, the way they worked when they were in their building, whatever. Now, I guess the question is, if you are management in a company of any size, how do you get everybody doing that?
I think the getting everybody to do that is in the category of the search for perfection, which would be the murder of the good. How do we get most of them to do it most of the time? A lot of times they are preoccupied with the content of their job. They have a system, they have a deadline, they've got an installation or a service problem, and they're thinking about that in the moment, rather than thinking about the client relationship. That's understandable. But I think if they can go beyond that, there are some things that we can do that would help them. For example, getting our technicians to stress their availability to the client for follow-up or exchange or information. I know a lot of companies where the technicians don't have business cards. And when you think about it, figure a typical audiovisual technician had little to do with the decision-making process. So the people who bought the system he's putting in aren't there. It's the people who use it. So those are the folks he's going to interact with. And if he's able to give them a business card and say, "If you have anything come up at all with this, call me and I'll be glad to respond or get you the kind of help you need." So theoretically, that's going on at the next level up where the account executive has been dealing with the buying influences. But that's far removed from the here and the now. So make it easy for the client to get together with you. Have a system or a process for a review of how an installation or an encounter went. Ask that your service reports include things that the client said or exchanges that were had that go beyond the pure technical observations. "Yeah, I was there at 10 o'clock. I was there for 45 minutes. It was broken. I fixed it." That's not a good service report to me. The one that I want to also know who was there, who saw my work, who did I speak to, what did we talk about, what were their general attitudes about us. So we can come at it from some of our processes, but again, we really need to reinforce it every time we interact with one of our staff.
I understand. Yeah, that's something that if I look back, I actually have had the fortune over the last couple of years of doing it accidentally, which I'm ashamed to admit to you. But we adopted a project management system for our installations group. And it's a web-based system called Basecamp. You've seen it. It's extremely simple. I mean, it's nowhere near a Microsoft project. It is work assignments and then a return on how did it work out. And one of the things I noticed was that as our technicians became comfortable with the system, they found it to be their feedback system to me, to Eric, where we're now getting those kind of results back from calls. While I was there, I saw Bob, and Bob asked about this. And then, you know, that becomes an instant feedback call to Bob, and that's been really, really good for
me. Well, I also think, Joel, that what happens when we make that part of our process and part of our corporate culture is the technician or the person on site generates an awful lot of good information about further opportunities.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's one of the things that we've seen is that just keeps us in this constant ongoing communication loop between our sales and management, our technicians, and our customer over and over and over again. And that really helps. Okay, let me take you to another place here, which is you remember me when we were at Audiovisual Systems. I was starting out in the early 80s, and I was the insanely enthusiastic technical person. Still just love what we do for a business. And one of the things that I really wanted was to loop all of our technicians into it, and they wanted to too. And we had a boss who was one of the greatest guys in the audiovisual industry, but to be fair, also had a very traditional idea of what sales and management were. And it took pushing from the bottom as technicians to make that really open up to us as being part of sales. If you're a tech in a company, in a company of any size, you're a field person, how do you begin to show people that that kind of everybody sells attitude is what the field needs? And B, how do you prepare for it? In other words, if you're going to show that as an example, what do you do in the morning when you get up as a tech to make your feedback for those things valuable and to make it positive?
Oh, I think there are a lot of things, and they're very subtle, and they're very no one of them is going to be really dramatic. But reminders when you sign on to your computer in the morning, screensavers that talk about the importance of client service, respecting channels, of course. But how many techs go to a sales meeting when the company has a periodic sales meeting? How many account executives or anybody from management other than the department in question go to the technical meetings? How good is the communications link between project management and the technical staff, between project management and the sales team? How effectively linked are the respective managers of those departments? Do they continually promote this sort of thing? Is there opportunity? Now, you'll hear all the excuses that that's not my department. I don't have time. I really don't have any impact on that. I can't control what they do. You know, the excuses will be endless and numerous, but the reality of it is if you really want this to be part of your culture so people think about it as soon as they open their eyes in the morning, then you really have to work on it very, very diligently, I believe.
Okay, well, then let's start here. If you are somebody who's in charge of sales and marketing tomorrow morning, and you want to encourage this, or you're somebody who's an owner, and you want to encourage this as part of your company culture, what's the one great thing you could do tomorrow morning to make that happen?
Oh, this could be one of those describe the universe and give two examples question. I'm not sure I have an instantaneous answer to that. I think the first thing I would do tomorrow morning would be to commit to myself and then get started on it right now, as opposed to put it on my to-do list, is to examine our corporate culture as I think it exists and then see how close to that objective we already are. Where do we have opportunity that we're not taking advantage of? What could we be doing? And that's my to-do list, is what could we be doing to improve that? But if you're asking me what do I do tomorrow morning, I make a commitment that I'm going to explore this, I'm going to investigate it, and I'm going to proactively and aggressively try to address it. I'm also going to engage my management staff to ask them how they think we're doing and what suggestions they might have. But I'm not going to just bring that up at my usual Monday morning staff meeting. I'm going to bring it up every Monday morning at this staff meeting. And I'm going to not just listen to tell me what I want to hear kind of things. I'm going to ask for examples, good and bad. I'm going to see where the learning points are in things that happened in the prior week that we can make a point of. I'm going to send out emails to people that talk about the good and the not so good. I'm going to be in their face. This is not something that most people see as part of their job. For example, for 30 years or so, I insisted on believing that the individual who was an effective account executive would also be an effective business developer. I am now convinced those are two different critters. I think their DNA is different, and I'm not sure we're ever going to get the hunter to farm or the farmer to hunt. Now, that doesn't mean we can't get them to nibble around the edges, but I would say the same about our technical force. I'm not sure we can ever get these people to be both technical experts and client service experts, but we can make some improvements. We can have them thinking about it a little bit more. And when we do, I think we get a really nice assembly bonus of 1 and 1 equals 3.
Something you told me years ago was that the chief function of management is to keep the herd headed roughly west. And if we do that as part of this, if we just make that part of our thinking and part of the thinking that we demonstrate every day, that's probably the first step. And we are running out of time here. So for those of you who want to talk about the second step, I'm going to ask Bill to come back on a future show and get into this some more. And the other thing is, for those of you who want to contact him directly, his email link is on the page where you got this webcast. Bill, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
It was a pleasure, Joel. You know that this is a subject I love to talk about.
I know, me too, and I'm amazed at how fast half an hour has gone. Are there any thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, if I have one parting thought, it would be that the expression "everybody sells" is not just a platitude. It's a way of life, and not only does everybody sell, but everything sells. Every impression you make is going to be either positive or negative. It is not going to be neutral, and I think that's the thought I'd like everybody to leave with, is there's no such thing as a neutral encounter. And that is why it's so important to make every encounter a positive experience for the client or the prospect.
Well, Bill, this has been a very positive experience for us at Rave. Thanks again for being with us today.
Thank you, Joel.
That's all we have time for. But join us again next episode when the week will be recorded at Infocom Live, and we'll hear from several influential members of the rental and staging community. Don't forget, there's lots more to listen to in our other podcasts on Rave Radio. Check them all out at www.ravepubs.com and on iTunes. And thanks once again to our sponsor, Mitsubishi, for helping us bring you this show. Check out some great stuff at www.mitsubishi.com. And please join us again here on Rave Radio. I'm Joel Rollins, wishing you a great week ahead.